the year 10,191. In this time, the most precious substance in the universe is the spice melange. The spice extends life. The spice exists on only one planet in the entire universe. The planet is Arrakis, also known as Dune.
Son, a podcast about Dune.
Hey there, Sandies. Welcome to Sand, a podcast about Dune. I'm here with my host, Lance. hey, Lance, how's it going?
Hey, Molly.
Good. No comment. We are here to discuss chapters 25 through 29. Mm-hmm. Yep. Of Children of Dune.
I think it's 28.
Oh, yeah, 20. Yeah, because it's one less than four.
It's one less than four. We did four chapters, but it's one less than four.
Right. Yeah, okay. Exactly. So, cool. All right, should we just jump right into movie talk?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
Okay, sweet.
And we'll circle back around to there being another word for one less than four.
Well, but, I think you intuitively got that I meant that there's five. One yes. less than four. One less than five.
I know what you meant. You meant when you're adding.
Yes, when you're adding. Yes. Okay, thank you. Yes. Oh my God. Christ.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Okay, yeah. Let's talk about movies.
Yeah.
So this week I watched The Bourne Identity, The Bourne Supremacy, The Bourne Ultimatum, Scanners, huh. Kong vs. Godzilla, Mothra vs. Godzilla, and Bad Trip.
Ooh.
I will talk about Bad Trip. This is that, what's his name, Eric Andre?
Uh-huh.
Right? Is that, that's it, right?
That's a name, yeah. That's a guy.
Yes, Eric Andre. Okay, good. Just confirming. Eric Andre, I think he's funny and charismatic and everything, but I've always thought his show's kind of just maybe a little too weird. I don't really like his stand-up very much. But this movie's really funny.
Oh,
it's
good.
Just him doing pranks, and the victim of the prank is always himself. He's just doing something that makes himself look absolutely ridiculous, and then he shows everybody's reaction to it, and the reactions are just really funny. Like, they're just like real people, and the way they react to, like, you know, him getting all his clothes sucked off into a vacuum cleaner. It's just like they range anywhere from like the nicest people in the world who like genuinely want to help him, mm-hmm. to like people who are just like furious because they're just freaked out about being in the situation. But it's so, I don't know, it's great. These reactions, I expected to not like this movie and came out loving it. And I feel like the kind of secret weapon in this movie is Tiffany Haddish.
Sweet. Oh my God, I love her.
Yeah, oh my God, she's amazing in this movie. And she's not like one of the main characters, but she's so, every time she shows up, it's so funny. She's just so good in it.
I can't wait to watch this now. It sounds amazing. It sounds like because I love Jackass, ashamedly. Mm. I love them. I think they're so funny. Mm-hmm. And this sounds like an even better version.
It's very similar. Yeah, it's very similar to Jackass. Mm-hmm. It's similar to those like kind of pranks they would do in Jackass, mm-hmm. or whatever, but with like, yeah, a little bit more focus on the people. And it's very like, it's clearly that they are just like run and gun, like, you know, guerrilla filmmaking, because like there's moments where like you see the sound guy, like, yeah. they're just like, whatever, there's the sound guy's in the shot.
Cool. Cool.
With headphones on and everything.
Oh my God. I don't know how I would handle. I think I would hate being put in a situation like that.
Yeah. And of course, the whole time I'm watching, I'm like, you know what sucks is that it has a narrative flow to it, right? The whole movie has it's just a setup for these pranks, but it still has a story. So you have to just like think that these things are happening to these people and that's just the story of it. So they can't show what happens after the prank part. So the whole movie, I'm like, I wish we could just see what happens afterwards. And then while the credits are running, they just show them coming out and telling everybody what happened. And that's just as funny.
Oh, God, this sounds so good. When did this come out?
It just came out like a couple weeks ago. It's on Netflix.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. I had no idea about this. Sounds very fun. A perfect spring movie.
Yeah, it is a perfect spring movie. And then I forget how we do this. Do I do two and then you ask?
Well, we've been doing two. We've been doing two lately, which seems kind of okay.
Okay, let's just keep doing that.
Let's do that for now. We've talked about a lot of movies.
Okay.
Okay. I want to hear about Mothra versus Godzilla.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Cuz I don't know what a Mothra is.
Oh, you know what Mothra is?
No.
What do you think Mothra is? What does it sound
moth, like? Moth, big moth man.
That's exactly what Mothra is. It's not a man. Mothra is a she, but yeah, but it's a giant moth.
Right.
So I had just watched Kong versus Godzilla, the brand new one that just came out. And I was like, oh, I had started watching all those old King Kong movies. I mean, all those old Godzilla movies a long time ago. I should go back and revisit them. And this was like the next on my list. And it's so fun and so ridiculous. It starts with people finding a giant egg, which is... Of course, you know, they're using models. So it's a full-on Easter egg. Like, it's painted like an Easter egg. Yeah. It's a chicken egg that they use to, like, clearly a chicken egg that they painted. And they find this giant egg, and, like, a local businessman buys the egg. and then these two, I'd say, 1-foot-tall women show up, and they're like, please give us back our egg. And
how would they even if it's a giant egg? Is it bigger than 1 foot?
It's not their egg. They're representing Mothra. It's Mothra's egg.
Okay.
No. They belong to this, so they live on it's funny, they live on an island that I think they call Tiny Island. The thing you have to keep in mind is that Mothra was already a movie before this came out. And they just pitted Mothra against Godzilla for the sake of this movie because Godzilla was really popular and so was the Mothra character. So they had already established in this movie these like tiny women who live on this island where everybody else is at normal size, but they all kind of worship Mothra.
Okay, but why are these women tiny?
That I don't know because I haven't seen Mothra.
Okay.
But these women keep showing... The thing is, like, these women keep showing up throughout the movies. Like, even when Mothra's not there, you'll find these tiny women in a Godzilla movie.
What?
Man, it's weird. And then Godzilla... I don't even remember what Godzilla shows up for, but he gets mad and shows up and starts stomping around because the older Godzilla movies he's a bad guy. He pretty quickly becomes a good guy after this movie, but he's still a bad guy in this one. And
Godzilla
he starts stomping around.
A good guy.
Oh yeah, most of Godzilla's movies he's a good guy.
In what way?
Like another like Rodan or one of the other Mechagodzilla or one of the other bad guy.
He kaijus. Puts his body in front of asteroids and stuff?
No, like one of the other kaijus will show up and start wrecking shit. Mm. And then Godzilla shows up and says, nuh-uh, this is my island.
Okay.
And then they fight and knock down all the buildings.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah. but yeah, he's still a bad guy in this one. And so they go and beg these ladies to talk to Mothra and convince Mothra to come fight Godzilla.
Why? Just because it would be awesome?
No, because Godzilla is like wrecking their island, and Mothra a good guy. Mothra is like good.
So in this one, Mothra is the good guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And so they talk to, and Mothra.
Sounds like they're both monsters.
Yeah, they're big giant monsters. Yeah, Mothra's a big giant moth, okay. And Godzilla's a big giant lizard dragon or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, half the movie is just like, you know, rubber suits fighting each other and knocking over models and stuff, but it's super fun and super ridiculous.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. Okay. And for whatever reason, Godzilla also wants to fuck up Mothra's egg. Just never really clear why.
Oh gosh, I hope not. Also, a moth just sounds so delicate.
Yeah. I mean, whatever. It's not, this movie's so old, it's not really spoiling anything.
Yeah.
So Mothra does, like, it gets revealed that Mothra is going to die soon.
Oh.
But this egg is to kind of, like, Mothra never dies is what they say.
Oh,
like,
she reborns.
Yeah, she'll reborns. Be reborn. She does reborn out of this chicken egg for some reason.
Okay.
But, so Mothra does die after, like, kicking Godzilla's ass pretty good, but not enough to kill Godzilla. Mm-hmm. So the egg does hatch, and there's little larva monsters that attack their twins, and they attack
Godzilla.
They attack Godzilla, and they capture
twins.
Godzilla or defeat. Yeah, they defeat Godzilla by just spraying like webs or silk or something on it. There's like a 5-minute sequence of them just like peeking out from behind rocks and shooting this web stuff around Godzilla, and then like going behind the rock again, and Godzilla just like kind of like struggling and trying to get out of this web.
Wow, awesome!
It's ridiculous. It's very fun, and I'm gonna probably watch the rest of these bad Godzilla movies.
Yeah, it sounds so good. What fun? Okay, awesome. I'm glad I asked about that. I want to watch Mothra too now. Origin story.
Yeah, well, I'll probably go back and watch Mothra too.
I do really want to know what these tiny women. I can like picture what they're what they're like. Kind of like, please don't. Can we have our egg? Just like really weird and but serious. I don't know. I'm excited.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this week I watched Defending Your Life.
Okay.
Greener Grass, Gaslight, and Support the Girls. I guess I'll talk about Defending Your Life because it was good. I don't know if we were recording when I watched Modern Love, Modern Romance. There's another Albert Brooks movie.
So, I don't think we talked about that one.
Well, I really liked that one, and I don't know. I guess I've never really seen like a classic Albert Brooks when he's like doing his whatever his thing is, you know, kind of like witty movies on the modern man. But this one was cool. It was like about an advertising executive who gets hit by a car, and he goes to what is sort of like a liminal space, purgatory sort of area, where he's supposed to basically defend his life and see if he'll go on to the next one or not. And I thought it was very smart. It was a little, it like creeped me out because that is a nightmare. But I thought, like, and the place was creepy. It was very 80s and just was like, hey, you can go to golf courses and buffets. And, well, that would be cool. I would prefer if, like, this is supposed to be a real hotshot time and my only break from Earth, that it would be, like, more like a tropical paradise. But that's just me. Maybe it would be like that for me. I'm not sure. This was a lot of, it was very hotel heavy. When he meets Meryl Streep, and Meryl Streep is, you know, breezy and sweet in it, and I don't know, the writing was really good. I always say super. The writing was well crafted, and the ideas he puts forth about, you know, how you measure up a life and what it's all for and what kind of humans or, you know, this our spirits are heading towards was cohesive and cool and resonated, I thought, with me. Well, I do know it resonated with me. And then, so I thought it was really good.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, that's a good movie. I really like that movie. Mm-hmm. I like Albert Brooks a lot.
Yeah. No, he's definitely a smart, funny writer. And I've enjoyed both of the movies I've seen of his quite a bit. The other one was, Modern Romance. And that one's just like about a breakup where the two people mm-hmm. can't stop breaking up with each other. But he nails the neurotic not in love, but obsessed, because I don't know how to handle anything like living without an obsession, kind of.
Yeah.
Sort of love. Yeah. It was good.
He's, we've still got Albert Brooks, as far as I'm, as,
I think
as far
so.
As I know.
Yeah.
So he'll fill that, because I can't watch Woody Allen movies anymore. He'll fill that gap.
Oh, yeah. He totally fills that gap. No, I think he married an eccentric hat maker or something. So, like, kind of, they were both older. So he seems like he has a clean bill of health.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll, you know what? I've always wanted to see Gaslight and never have. How was that?
Oh, it was wonderful. I just love these old movies. But this is just a wonderful, because there's so, the story, the way it's told is just always, everything that is in the story just serves a purpose. So it's very concise and neat that way. But it's where the term Gaslight comes from. That's why it's famous,
right.
I suppose. Ingrid Bergman witnessed her aunt's murder as a young girl. And then she meets this dashing man and while she's living in Italy. And they move back into the house and she begins to kind of feel like she's haunted. And mostly, I mean, it is hard. It's a little hard to watch because, so, I mean, from the very beginning, he becomes quite manipulative. And just seeing how he coerces her into thinking that she's going mad is very skin crawly. But Ingrid Bergman is wonderful. There's a man who like fell in love with her aunt when he was a young boy. And so he sort of becomes the hero of the story, but you don't know how. And I don't know. Yeah, it was great. Oh, also Angela Lansbury is in it as a young. And she's so young. She plays like a cheeky, pretty maid who sort of hates Ingrid Bergman. And she's just always like, she's like, you're not treating your husband right and all that. And but she's so good in it. And I just loved seeing her. I don't think I'd seen her in anything when she's so young, but she's really funny and good. So that was a treat as well.
Yeah. I remember when Angela Lansbury was, well, for whatever reason, a joke to a lot of people in the, you know, I'm assuming because of Murder, She Wrote. Mm-hmm. But I remember when when people first discovered, oh, she's in all those movies and she's like really hot.
Yeah, she is really pretty hot. Yeah. She's really pretty. Yeah. It was kind of a mind bender. I was like, whoa. Like, it was hard to watch her and be like, because I've seen every season of Murder, She Wrote, like, multiple times.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, it was hard to wrap myself around this, like, young, like, sort of, I mean, she was cast as sort of slutty in a fun way. Mm-hmm. And, it was great. Loved that.
Yeah, I will probably watch that.
Yeah, it was really good.
We can edit this out if you want, but I just sent you
a link. Cool. Wow, they're so fancy. Lance sent me a link of the 2-foot-tall women, and they are fancy AF. They're so cool.
Also, I forgot to mention, they sing a lot.
Uh-huh. Cool. Yeah. I want to be one.
You want to be one?
Yes. They're sitting on a little branch. Wow. Amazing. And they sing.
All right. Well, shall we get started on our...
I thought of a good transition phrase.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But I'm kind of forgetting. I think it was like Dune Yawana.
Dune Yawana.
Dune comma Yawana. But like, do you wanna, you know? But Dune comma Dune Yawana.
All right, well, Molly, Dune Yawana.
Yes. What does that mean? Okay.
What? You came up with it.
I'm just kidding.
Okay. All right. Yeah, so we have this first chapter, chapter 25, mm-hmm. which, again, immediately we're told that Jessica's hanging out on some spice cloth.
Yep, we gotta know. What, yeah, a rug of yeah. spice cloth.
Let us know right away what's made out of spice, please.
She is still on Arrakis.
Yes, she is mm-hmm. still on Arrakis. She's waiting with the Fadaken, including, oh, what's his name? Al-Fali.
I would love, though, I mean, I just do think it would be nice if I could sit on a poof or something, and it would emit, like, Valium. Like, you wouldn't have to go through all the hoopla of preparing weed or whatever, you know?
Right.
You could just, like, right. step on a little cloth and breathe it in. Okay, but yeah, she's yeah. with Al-Fali.
Yeah. yeah. Yeah, she's with Al-Fali. And she's waiting to hear back from Stilgar. Uh-huh. She sent a message.
She sent, "My daughter is possessed and must be put to trial."
Yes. Which is the trial of possession, which I'm assuming we're going to see in this book, and I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
I hope this isn't a lustration situation oh, where we're God, promised something cool and we don't get it.
Yeah, because you can just see, like, her being chained to her throne and, like, the Baron's spirit coming out of her Ghostbuster style.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. So, yeah, and then she gets the news that Aaliyah has requested, I guess, custody of the twins.
Mm-hmm.
And Butleto and Ghanima are not at Sich Tabor, right. where they should be.
They're out in the desert, and they have to figure out who took them, or...
Yeah, or why they're in the desert.
Why they're in the desert, yeah.
She has some theories that they were sent to the desert.
Yeah, well, she thinks, oh, is it... Did Stilgar put them to the... Like, take them out to the desert? Couldn't have been him. And she realizes that they went on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and... Al-Fali is like, those two little children gone in the... Yeah, he doesn't really say that, but he's right. astonished that two children have gone into the desert by themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even like, she's even like, guesses that they might have tried to go to Jakarootoo too.
Yeah. Which, yeah, TBD. It's also, she says that they've... Oh, that they're in this Sich that... was kind of like a rebel Sich and wasn't coming under Aaliyah's rule. And mm-hmm. part of that is that they grew dogs as big as horses.
That's right.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, they had put all of their capital into a scheme to raise dogs as large as ponies. And then all of them died.
Right.
It's terrible.
I mean, I can't imagine the desert being a real good place for dogs.
Especially not bigger dogs. Horse-sized yeah, big dogs.
Yeah, horse dogs. Yeah.
Just for the kids it seems like it was just for the kids.
Yeah, we should just do emus. We don't need to bring horse-sized dogs.
Yeah.
Into the desert. Yeah, so then we get Duncan Idaho shows up. He's been sent by Stilgar.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, before that, also, Jessica's yes. thinking back on her conversation with Leto in an interesting way where she's like, what was he doing there? So hopefully we get to know more about what he was doing or how he was trying to manipulate her.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But yeah, Duncan comes in.
Mm-hmm. And then right away she's like, yeah, did Aaliyah send here you here to kidnap me?
Mm-hmm.
And then he's yeah. immediately like, well, yeah, that's what she told me to do, but I'm here to help.
Kinda, yeah. So...
Yeah, she has regrets about Aaliyah, and he also has the regrets, and they kind of, like, share, like, well, we both trusted her. We mm-hmm. both, like, have lost Aaliyah.
Oh, yeah, he says... Mm-hmm. She says, I know you wanted, a younger version of me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which I was like, damn, I hadn't thought about that. Okay, twist.
Yeah, you wanted a girl you saw as a younger version of me.
Mm-hmm.
He accepted this silently.
I think she should have trusted Al-Fali instead of Duncan, though, at this point. I mean, she had no choice.
You think that she should have trusted Al-Fali instead of Duncan?
Mm-hmm.
But you mean, like, instead of letting Duncan take her?
Well, he seems to have taken her without, like, I thought he was going to take her just and hide her away, or take her, they'd come up with a plan, overthrow Aaliyah, but he's taking her to Seleucus Secundus.
Right. Yeah. So that is where we get where she just makes the decision like, oh, well, Duncan's supposed to take me. I mean, that's what Leto told her anyway. And so she's like, well, Duncan's supposed to take me, so I'll go ahead and do that. So she sends the Fedaiken away and they're like, wait, why? I don't like this. Mm-hmm. And she makes them leave anyway.
He says he's the husband of the cone teen.
That's right. Mm-hmm. The cone teen. And that's when she's like, yeah, she's like, you know, Aaliyah is no longer an Atreides, so you don't have any, you know, allegiance to her any longer. You don't have to, like, be loyal to her. And then they get inside his ornithopter and he presses a fun little button on his steering wheel.
Yeah, and, like, all these straps pop out.
Yeah. He traps her. Traps her into her seat with cocoon restraints.
Yeah.
And it says that it's unbreakable softness. Which sounds like a toilet paper ad.
Like, yes, completely. Honestly, would buy.
Yes, yeah, totally. Unbreakable softness sounds good.
It also kind of sounds like Duncan.
Yeah. He is kind of like unbreakable softness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's when he's just like, yeah, I'm taking you to. Well, at first she's like, where are you taking me? And he's like, I'm not going to tell you. And eventually he does tell her that he's taking her to Seleucus Secundus and tells her not to use the voice on him.
Uh-huh.
Because he's like better than that, or he knows how to. Like, oh, and don't even
to use the voice on me, because I've come a long way since then. Okay, so don't even, you can't. It's like, well, wait, she probably could though. You just don't want her to.
Yeah, like, and she probably doesn't want to. Yeah, because she's supposed to go along with this.
I guess that's true.
Yeah. And then he tells her that, like, the priest told him to do this. And she's like, is that Paul? And he's like, I wish I knew.
Yeah, it's like, well.
Which I'm like, yeah, it is, right?
Like,
of course it is.
I don't know. And if it is Paul, I don't know. Like, okay, so the priest told him to. We do. The reason I didn't take kindly to it is because he said we do the preacher's bidding, and Jessica throughout this chapter is kind of growing like unsure of Duncan and, you know, not, you know, certain of where his allegiance lay, and she was like getting her Pranu Bindu defenses up, and so then when he says we do the bidding of the preacher, I was like, ugh, you little foot soldier. I mean, he's a foot soldier. That's
yeah, he totally is. Yeah. He needs someone to be in charge of him.
Yeah.
And it can't be Aaliyah anymore.
Yeah.
So, that's also, he wants, he says, yeah, we do the preacher's bidding. He wants you to teach Faradin once you taught Paul. So, yeah, the preacher wants her to kind of train Faradin, which kind of locks into the possible, like, theory that Paul knows Faradin's going to be in power, so why not just focus on trying to make him a good leader instead of fight his place?
Yeah. I had trouble with Faradin. We'll have to we'll get into him in the next chapter. But there's a lot of he's drawing some Faradin Paul parallels.
Mm-hmm.
It covers it. I liked this chapter because it was fun to be back in a Sitch, you know, plotting and having people come like through the curtain and be like, "M'lady, Jessica," and tell her business.
I like that, and I liked seeing, you know, Duncan and Jessica get to meet, even if it's not like real Duncan.
Where is Gurney right now? He's just like running through the desert swinging his sword.
That's what I want to know, because it is real weird. Like, why'd she bring Gurney if we're not gonna see Gurney ever in this book?
Yeah, for real. At one point, they kind of, like, hint at what he's doing. She says that she's going to, like, send Gurney for some task.
Yeah, because he's out, like, what is he looking for, spies? I forget what he's out doing.
Oh, yeah. Or isn't he trying to find Jakaratu?
It's taken him this long.
Well, it's a very hidden sitch.
Yeah, that's true.
It's supposed
to be
unfindable. Just because they named it a different name.
Yeah.
Isn't that what we find out? We'll get to it, but
yes.
Yeah. So I assume we'll loop back in with Gurney in Sunny Jakaratu. But yeah, so that's Gurney.
I am curious. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, just it also seems like when she was referring to him that he was the one that was going to have to find the twins.
Yes, right. Right. And maybe that's when we'll find him. I'm like either he's leaving Gurney out of this story to have him show up at like a really opportune, cool moment. Mm-hmm. Or for like a big joke at the end where like everything's resolved and he shows up and he's like, I caught the guy. And everyone's like, Gurney.
Yeah. Or he's just like, where have you guys been? You know, and eating grapes and plucking his baliset.
Grapes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else about that chapter? I guess I am curious why Duncan decided to make it feel like a real kidnapping,
right,
when he had to strap her down. But maybe it's, you know, just so she doesn't have to lie about it. You know, like he really did strap her down. He really is taking her to Faridin.
Mm-hmm.
So it just makes it that much more real.
Well, and it did, you know. Yeah, I just don't understand why there has to be tension here. Like, yeah, so it is, it's interesting that Duncan is kind of towing the line. It's like, yeah, he has this soft binding of her, but he's under the guise, you know, the guidance of this preacher who I don't still trust yet, personally.
Right.
So we'll see. And definitely don't trust Seleucia Secundus and this whole business. I was like, oh, she has to go to Seleucia Secundus? Like, that sucks. Just take her to Caladan. But it would be pretty boring if they just, like, went to some, you know, random hideaway.
Right. All right. So then it brings us to the next chapter,
mm-hmm,
where Wincicia is like, and that's our plan.
Yes! Yeah, it's like, oh, I'll just rewind.
Yeah, like she revealed their plot against the Atreides.
Mm-hmm.
And Faridin's not exactly sure about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's Wincicia, Faridin, and Chekanique.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much this is like where it kind of seems like, oh, we were led to believe at the beginning of this book that Faridin's just like a dumb little dipshit,
mm-hmm,
that doesn't want to be emperor because he's just like a sheltered kid that, mm-hmm, is, you know, mama's boy. But now we find out that, like, oh, he's actually pretty dangerous because he is pretty smart.
Yeah, he's like, he's dangerous in the way of, like, there's this guy who's like motivational coach named Ryan Holiday, who draws a lot of inspiration from like Marcus Aurelius and Socrates. And he's always quoting those people to, like, you know, get ahead. And it kind of feels like Faridin's always in his library kind of coming up with, he's like very interested in power.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But just the idea of power.
Yeah.
And not really just like, you know, just like the, was it preacher? The preacher said about him.
Mm-hmm.
Who said it?
I must have,
I think it was the preacher.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, yeah, you want power. You don't know why.
Uh-huh. And he, yeah, but it does seem like that. And she's also like, whoa, he's like really coming alive under this whole plan of domination. But
yeah.
Yeah. At this point. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, okay. I would like to ask, like, what is your sense of Faridin? Like, what's his vibe to you?
I think he is very smart,
mm-hmm,
feeling rebellious.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't really want to, like, follow the path of, you know, the Shaddams, but he doesn't know really what he wants. He's kind of, well, he's kind of arrogant,
mm-hmm,
and he's
definitely
kind of, I think he's just learning. I think, honestly, he's like a kid that doesn't know what he wants to be when he grows up. but he's like really smart and considering his options. I feel like he has the opportunity to become a good person.
You
but
think
right
so?
Now,
right now he's like such a little asshole, but
yeah. But yeah. So is like when Sisha's evil. Like
yeah, I guess
he's
that's
an asshole
true.
To her.
Yes. Well, she is okay. So you think I guess I wasn't totally convinced by his turn on Winsisha at the end where he's like, and how did you train those tigers? Because, you know, I kind of liked her turn as this evil villain that used children to be trained. And so when he made it seem like this is, you know, an evil thing to do, I was like, well, we're on Seleucus Secundus, like this prison planet where y'all are sort of the underdog, like defeated people. Like, it just seems like you would be doing something evil and silly.
Yeah.
And I like that vibe. So I don't know. I was kind of like, I mean, I don't see it as like a good thing that he's going to become more powerful than her. It seems more menacing to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like it's not like he objects to being evil. He doesn't like that she did that in his name because he hasn't. I don't think he's decided what kind of emperor he wants to be.
He also just thinks she's kind of a dumb twat. He's just like, oh, my dithering mother. Like she's her mind is so easily manipulated. So if maybe he was more just mad at her being pure evil, I would have been more on board. But I was a little bit turned off by him just being straight up like. Not misogynistic, but he just seemed to like really think that she was a silly, vapid person. And
yes.
That was not my read of Winsisha from the beginning, even though like Chakanik also seemed to like be treating her in that sort of disrespectful way. I don't know. I think it's just that like the Irulan and the Winsisha of it all, maybe I'm just I'm not totally on board, but I like the perspective that maybe he's just a smart, young, arrogant kid who.
Yeah, I think also he's like, he's kind of like fine with like, okay, I'm fine if you need these twin hungry tigers, if it works,
right?
But it seems like y'all are just doing bad guy shit just to do bad guy shit.
Fine, like, do it.
Yeah, it's fun for the book, but what I'm saying is like,
yeah,
I don't think he's like, I think he's like, you want me to be like Shaddam, who's just this dude that's like war,
right,
let's kill them all.
Yeah.
And that is what they want.
Yeah, they're like,
and
I
he's like,
all
I know I read
books
some books
he's reading. Yeah, that's a peculiar trait, and that he's a descendant of Finring.
Oh yeah,
so he's got a bit of that muttering scheming going on in his mind.
Yes. And of course it ends with him going to the library.
Yeah. So he's quite observant. They go back and forth about, do they talk about anything else?
It's a short chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. He's like, the way they kind of realize that he's really observant is he's noticed that Technique has stopped calling his mother. Oh, yeah, he used to call her my princess.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's wondering, like, what does he call her now? Queen Mother? Are you calling her Queen Mother? I guess he's just trying to, like, get a feel for, like, his allegiance to her or how he sees her. If she's, like, he feels like Tekinik sees her as this, you know, whatever, the sitting temporary manager or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Tychonik sees that as like as very observant.
Yes. But it is interesting that they make a big deal about that. I suppose it's just to show that he's observant. But I suppose it also just means that she's no longer a princess. She now has a son that's old enough to rule. Maybe. But instead he calls her my lady. And they.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like he's wondering if they are trying to mimic House Atreides, and he kind of has been reading up on House Atreides.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He's been reading up on the two houses, pretty much. And Carino and Atreides.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess is maybe that's supposed to kind of suggest that he's locking himself in or obsessing with the past the way that Paul kind of got lost in the future. Ah, I don't know if
okay.
That's
interesting.
Intentional.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah, so after this whole chapter where he's kind of like manipulating his mom and hate, you know, feeling like she's missing the point all the time, he seems to have committed to the idea of their plan, and he's
yes.
somewhat upset. He's upset in the way all these poor young kids with too much power are upset that he won't like get to just read his books and flit about.
Yeah, he's got to take over dad's company, so
yeah,
he needs to like put down
stop
the
skateboarding
and, yeah
stop huffing. But like,
yeah, anything
I don't
else
know.
About
well, okay, I just can't. I don't. Still, like, do you like him? Do you think he's cool? Like, how do you picture him?
I think he's an a-hole.
Yeah.
But I'm enjoying it because I think when Sisha's also an a-hole, I think they're all a-holes, and it's kind of fun to watch him like just belittle her. Like he's so shitty to her.
I know. I'm over it. I think because we've belittled Alia, we've belittled Irulan. It's like,
yeah,
oh,
totally.
Can we just take a break? Like, and so I wish I was having fun with that. I'll take that. That's probably the point. I'm annoyed. I'm like, okay, ugh, whatever. I'm not really rooting for Fairden.
I would like her to like clap back every once in a while. I don't want her to feel like so like, oh, he's bested me in this conversation. It does seem like she's like, well, shit.
Yeah. Well,
this
I think
kid's really got my number.
I honestly think you're right. I think we're supposed to think it's kind of cool that he's like, you know, giving her the what's what, and he has the moral high ground with these kids thing. You know, it's just like, ugh. But I find him really annoying so far. So
I get it. Yeah. I mean, yeah. He's still currently a bad guy. Even though he disagrees with his bad guy mother, he's still currently a bad guy.
Yeah. I mean, just because you go to the library doesn't mean you're all that, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It doesn't. You know, maybe he just, you know, reads the headlines. Maybe he doesn't really.
No, I think he really reads. I think he takes it in and he uses that as his power, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
This is fine.
Yeah.
But it is.
I do think he's got the air of a teenager who's just convinced himself that these older people just don't know what's what. And he's so much smarter than them and will do such a better job than them.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah.
Arrogant.
Arrogant. Perfect word. Okay, so now we're in a pretty fun chapter.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I love this one.
Stick 'em, poke 'em.
Yeah.
So Ghanima and Leto made it to this little crack in the rocks. They dropped down.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Just as much as I like the opening of the last chapter being, and that's our plan, I like a chapter that starts with, now!
Yes. Much better. It's even better. Now! Okay, we're in a chapter!
Yeah, they are being chased by these tigers.
Mm-hmm.
Leto has... The tigers that Leto has clearly decided he wish he wasn't being chased by.
Yeah, he's like, those are too big.
And then they jump inside this little cave. Ghani got scratched on the way in.
That's right.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not too bad.
Right, that one's not, that one's kind of just surface level.
Mm-hmm.
And Leto.
And above them, so, you know, the slit, they can see right to the sky, but there's something above it and obscuring that view.
Yeah, I'm trying to kind of picture this place. I guess it's just like a crevice between, like, or just like a crevice in a hill or mountain that has, like, both a kind of hole that they can get through and then that hole at the top, but it's like kind of, it's mostly enclosed, but because
well, like,
it's completely dark inside.
Have you ever been to Enchanted Rock?
No, I don't think I have.
No. Well, whatever. This wouldn't even, probably most people haven't listening to this, but there's a big pile of rocks there where you can kind of crawl in and crawl through, and it's easy to get down below, and there'd be like, Yeah, just like little holes where you can slip into a hole where there's like a pile of rocks above you. And so it's like mini caves everywhere. So that's what I'm picturing. It's that they like slipped into this little crevice and there's still like rocks all around. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah. So then they get inside this little hole, and there's the one tiger on top and the one tiger on the outside, like at the front door, essentially. Mm-hmm. There's one tiger on the roof, and Leto tricks the top tiger by like reaching his way up there and then stabbing him with a poison tipped.
Well, it's kind of gruesome. I mean, he just basically sticks his arm up there feels the tiger run its body like over it. And he's just like, I don't know, being like splashed with tiger's blood.
Tiger blood. Yeah.
But luckily there's this poison tip. So yeah, they hear all these screams of the first laws of tiger.
Falling down the mountain.
Yeah, but it is gruesome to think of like just a tiger ripping through this knife and he's just like holding it there. And,
yes.
So then they smell the second tiger.
That's right. They smell the second tiger. Mm-hmm. And it gets back above them, but he won't be lured in. What were you going to say?
Well, just that they have this cute little exchange where it says, do you think they'll have a third one in reserve? Not likely. Laws of tigers hunt in pairs, just as we do.
Yeah, that's nice.
That is nice. Although, of course, they were bred for that purpose, but for twins.
Yeah, so he grabs her Chris knife. Oh, did he kill... No, he killed the first Laza tiger with his own knife, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and so then they say that one of them needs to not be wounded. And so Ghani has to be the one to, like, stand up and risk her life because she's already wounded.
Right.
Yeah, or take the risk because Leto needs to remain whole.
Yeah, and Ghani, like, sticks up her knife and the... tiger just claws the shit out of her arm.
Oh, it's so gruesome.
I know. It's very gruesome. Like, but she like sticks through it and stabs the tiger anyway.
Yeah, it says that it like shows her the dance of her arm or something, or like the movement of her arm as she twisted around and stabbed the tiger like further. And you can see the tiger's scrape like go along her arm. But then Leto patches it up pretty quickly.
Yeah, but they have like a little tent because they don't want people to see the light, so they have like a little tent that keeps them in darkness while he patches her up, which I thought was funny.
Interesting.
She heard him twisting to reach his frimkit, felt the dark slickness of a night shield.
No. Yeah, because they're still nervous that whoever's controlling the tigers is going to be around.
Exactly. Yeah. That's going to be out there. She or screams, that anybody could be out there.
She screams Takwa, and then stabs the tiger.
It's cool. Yeah, that's right.
The price of freedom.
Takwa? That's right. Cool.
Takwa! Stabs him. So cool. So way to go, Ghani. Oh, and he says that he can't do her bandage too neatly or because it has to look like she did it herself.
She did it herself. Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
Which actually turns out to be more for her benefit than for his. I mean, for, like, any future person they might talk to. Because I'd imagine if she's that smart and she looked down and could see that somebody else had really... Like, because, yeah, as we get there, her illusion of... We'll get there first.
So, I was a little confused by this. Mm-hmm. He switches out their Fremkits, gives her his, but first he takes out all the stuff he used to bandage her, so if someone checks the frame kit they won't think, oh, why is there bandages in here, you have bandages on your leg and arm. But why didn't he just let her keep her frame kit? I just
because she would have had to use her frame kit. Well, unless she, because I don't think she would have gone down and grabbed his, you know, off of his dead body, but...
Right.
Yeah, so she...
You're saying that the story will be that she took his from Kit? because she has his, they swap frame kits, which is why what I don't understand. Why do they need to swap frame kits?
I don't know. Okay, here's my frame kit. I took the bandages from it. Maybe he needs one too. But why did they swap? Okay, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just confusing to me.
Yeah.
Maybe that will come up later. I don't know.
It must. I mean, there's really, I don't think there's a, yeah, it must come up later.
Yeah. Yeah.
But wait, yeah, I have no idea why they swapped those. That's a good question. Yeah, so they're starting to feel sad because this is the last time they're ever going to be together in the way that they've been together their whole lives. Leto says he's going to go to Jakaratu, and she says Fondok. And we learn that Jakaratu...
That's what they changed, changed the name.
...is also called Fondok, and that's probably the work of smugglers. Yeah, and that they... I guess that they just renamed it, and that's... I mean, a pretty good cover. Why not?
Yeah. Also, Leto's going to ride a worm.
Yes, he is. He, like, shows his little worm hook. And there we learn a new Fremen saying, which is choose a good worm.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what a bad worm would be. I mean, just a tiny one?
Yeah, or a slow one.
How could you tell?
I don't know, the way it's coming up on you?
Yeah, I suppose. I'd probably want to choose a slow one.
Oh, yeah. Easier to hop on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And then, like, so she leaves and she has to, it's like this sad thing that she does where she has to convince herself that her brother was killed. So
through
she,
hypnosis.
Like, self-hypnotizes herself to make her think that Leto died by the tiger attack.
Yeah, it happened so quickly. And then it says her inner world became silent, blinked away from intrusion into her consciousness. It was a side effect she had not expected. So does that mean, like, her personality or her access to these older voices?
It's such a short, it's such a brief thing.
She found that, yeah. It is so quick. So it is just kind of like she completely has silenced this memory that Leto is, or this knowledge that Leto is still alive, and it is not part of her conscious mind anymore.
Right.
She's, like, effectively weaved that into her, the way her brain works, so she can't register any clues that he might still be alive.
Yeah, if only Leto could have lived to learn this, she thought, and she did not find the thought a paradox.
Right.
Yeah, she sees Leto jump on a worm, and right away,
see a little,
she
like
doesn't
a little
see it.
Figure of Leto. It's so cute the way he says it. It's like, and her compulsion did not permit her to see a small figure riding on the ringed back. Aww. Aww. Yeah, so instead she thinks she sees Leto dead with the two tigers. And the sandworm comes to, like, pay its respect to the passing of Leto. So it's exciting because both of them are off on great adventures.
Right, yeah, and we don't know why. We don't know why they have to do this.
This
we don't know why we have to. Yeah, why Leto has to have died? Unless we're just tricking. Are we tricking Faradin? Who are we tricking? Who knows? Are we tricking? Well, I guess we're tricking Aaliyah.
We must be. Yeah. Oh, because they're trying to. So Aaliyah's task is to go back to the Quanat and figure out who is the traitor.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I suppose they needed somehow Leto's death, I guess they foresee, will, like, set in motion a big, solve the case, an uproar of some sort, shake this person out. And Leto is off to Jakaratu.
Cool. Anything else about that chapter?
I don't think so. From you?
Nope. Not really. The next chapter is just, like, very similar to...
Yeah.
The other chapter, it's just Faradin and Wincicia and Chikinik. But now they're talking about Duncan Idaho bringing Jessica.
Yeah, so I guess Duncan has arrived and he's offering Jessica to them.
Yes, he's offering Jessica to them.
And he's like, yeah, let's bank her. Let's put her in the bank.
Yeah, He's just like, she's worth something.
Yeah.
I don't know like exactly what just yet, but she's clearly worth something, so let's hold on to her. She's valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, he says that Javed has probably been a double agent. Still haven't heard from mm-hmm. Javed personally, so I don't know. I don't know what his deal is. But he could be a double agent.
Yeah, well, we don't know what Aaliyah and Javed talked about the first night that Aaliyah bedded him.
We need the bedroom scene, the pillow talk. Yes.
Yeah, and this is the chapter actually where we explore more Winchish's like comparison of Faradin to Shaddam IV.
Yeah.
Where she's just like, this kid's a nerd and mm-hmm. not like bloodthirsty like Shaddam IV.
Yeah, because she's like, oh, well, Jessica's quite pretty. She might seduce you with her Bene Gesserit ways. And he's like, she's pretty old.
Yeah. And then he says that the Fremen, he talks about the still suits.
Yeah.
And says that they are conservative and that they'll make a conservative mistake.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, what? Like, not buying enough bullets? Like, what? What is the conservative mistake they're going to make?
Yeah, is it, like, that they're still too, like, they're still too attached to the spice trade somehow?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They're not going to, like, think big enough? I don't know. But but they do make a big deal about his fascination with the still suit, like it like means he's perverted or something, because when Sisha is like, yeah. How could we, he was like, so you've noticed my,
yeah, so like you've noticed
suit. Yes.
And she's he like, likes that they noticed it.
Yeah, I like, I don't know, I'm telling you, I'm having such a hard time getting a read on Faradin. He's creepy to me. He's like a creepy twerp. Yeah. And so when Sisha says, how could we not notice? Right. Oh, and earlier he had interrupted her. Like, she was trying to make a point. He interrupts her. We never come back to it. And then later mm-hmm. she asks that, and he's, why, you know, he sends an irritated glance at her. Why did she interrupt like that? So I'm genuinely not sure if we're supposed to like him or not. Because that's so hypocritical.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they're all bad guys at this point. So I just don't, yeah.
You're not too worried about it.
He is an absolute dick to her, though.
Yeah.
Like, he's just openly ignoring her.
Yeah. Oh, and then I guess I kind of felt like, yes. So he's starting to talk about the still suit and how they're not wearing them as much. And that it's the dominant characteristic for humans to copy the conqueror.
Right.
Yeah. And Jackanik seems to think that that's kind of concerning, or he's surprised that that's something that Faradin's interested in, because it does seem like he wants to basically be a supreme dictator. He wants to be an imperial overlord, like control how people dress, not dress, but behave and live their lives.
Yeah, it's just so, I don't know, it's just like so weird. Like, he, when he says that about dominant characteristics for humans to copy the conqueror,
mm-hmm.
that's when Chekanik is like, do you really find such information valuable?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he says the mistakes they make will be conservative mistakes. And they all just kind of stare at each other.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a confusing thing to say.
Right.
And that's where, yeah, and that's where when Sisha is just like, he's nothing like Shaddam IV.
Yeah, that Shaddam IV would just like, no, okay, we're going to war. We're just going to dominate these people. It's great.
Right.
But instead, Faradin's trying to think about government and like how to control people and what, I mean, basically Paul's creation of jihad without the religion, right? Like mass control. More Paul Atreides. And she says that he's more Paul Atreides than Sardaukar.
Yes. Yeah. And then he says that the Atreides brought softness to Arrakis because they're from Caladan, which is a soft planet. And mm-hmm. Arrakis is a hard planet.
And they, yeah, they dominated, so Arrakis is copying them. And then he says that they're going to stress them out to death, basically.
Yeah.
By sending them lots of after-work emails.
Yeah.
So I think that when Sisha and Jack and Eek are now realizing that they've kind of unleashed a monster in Ferritin. Yeah. Where they're like, we were just going to like try to leverage like a bit more of the spice pie. But you seem to really want like supreme domination. I know it's becoming quite dark. Can you even see me?
Yeah. No, I can see you. I can see
you. Okay. But they're all kind of down, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess he's also like, I think that you're right. I think he just like is kind of like, you guys aren't thinking big enough.
Yeah.
Like, he's just like, I want more. Because Chaikineek is kind of saying like, well, we're getting kind of desperate here. And Ferritin at that point is like, oh no, you need to know when it's time to be desperate. It's not, we're, like, we have other choices.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know when you have no more choices. He's kind of like, no, we need to like push ourselves as far as we can. Don't get desperate until you're out of options.
Oh, yeah. Is that what you take to mean the last line?
Yes. When we come to the end of our rope, that's an important place to recognize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the way you phrased it.
All right. Okay. Cool. Well, there we go. That's those four chapters. We'll be back again in a week for 29,
30, 31, 32. Yes.
That's four chapters, but if you're counting, it's one less than four.
Mm-hmm. And that's just math.
That is just math. As always, you know, if you want to email us, please hit us up at sandthepodcast@gmail.com. Like, subscribe, rate us 5 stars mm-hmm. on iTunes. That would be amazing. What should we say?
And have a kick-ass week. That's also...
Oh, I and just have a kick-ass week.
I want to throw out have man. A kick-ass week. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Okay, my suggestion is taqua.
Taqua.
Taqua. Okay. I don't know how she would say it. She'd go. Anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. So until next time, 3, 2, 1. Taqua! All right. Bye.